Good morning. I'm Bridget Behe. Thanks, Charlie. I want to share with you some results today from a study that we did on perceptions of recycled and reclaimed water that is part of a USDA SCRI, the Clean Water 3 project. So water is becoming an increasingly important currency, and the global water crisis has really had a big effect on demand and looking at security of water and where and how we spend it. The population increase, climate change, and ecosystem changes really have impacted water quality and water quantity. And really these water issues are rising to the top. And so how we allocate, how we spend water in the future is going to be extremely important, and it's not all going to be fresh water sources. When we look at the words recycled and reclaimed and trying to understand how consumers perceive this reuse of water, the most common turnoff is the yuck disgust, or I even put the poop factor in there. Disgust is in what is in the water is most commonly cited as a significant factor that prevents them from using recycled water. And sometimes, often, it is a false perception that there is actually feces in the water or other toxins. That's why we call it the yuck factor or the poop factor. And this really puts up a very strong perceptual barrier to consumers using any type of recycled water. In fact, in Australia, not very long ago, a study showed that 70% of Australians believed that there was purified sewage in recycled water. So as marketers, we've got to deal with this revulsion to recycled water because we know it profoundly influences their willingness to use water recycled or reclaimed. But only 2% will tell you outright that it is an important piece of their decision not to use it. So our goal was to understand what people perceived about what we called the water, their perception of risk of two words, recycled and reclaimed water. These two terms, recycled and reclaimed, have no legal definitions, but they are often used interchangeably, and so we wanted to understand what people perceived about the perception of risk of using this water and what was in that water. So we conducted two identical online surveys in September of 2017, and the first thing that we did was ask subjects what was their water source and how risky it was to use water for quite a variety of uses. On a scale of 1 to 5, 1 was extremely risky and 5 was extremely safe. Then for the surveys, they were given one of two terms. Half of the subjects saw the word recycled and half of the subjects saw the word reclaimed. We then asked them to tell us in a free-form response what was in recycled water, and then we gave them another question that listed contents, and we asked them to check off which of those items were in the water. So they were identical in composition, except half of the subjects saw the word recycled water and the other half saw reclaimed water. So when we compared the demographics of the two subsamples, yeah, this is really hard to do up here. So there was really only one difference in that the subjects that saw the word reclaimed were very slightly 3 years older than the subjects that saw the word recycled. So they were very similar in composition demographically, which gives us a good basis to make that comparison. So when we asked them in a free-form response, what words would you use to describe what is in, and whichever survey they had, they saw the word recycled or reclaimed water, we did a Wordle, which we got rid of the capitalization and some of the spelling errors. The most common term to emerge was the word recycled, even though they were given the word reclaimed. And then when they were given the word recycled, what most often came up was the word reuse. But you'll notice that there are a lot of similarities here, and the size is an indication of how often that word was used, and the word waste is very prominent in both of those, and so this kind of verifies what the prior literature had talked about, the disgust factor or the yuck factor. So then we gave subjects a list of potential components in water, and this is listed alphabetically. And as you look down the list, what we saw consistently was the item was reported to be in water by a high percentage of people who saw the word reclaimed compared to the word recycled. So for example, when we look at dyes, we see that a higher percentage of people who saw the word reclaimed said that dyes were in there compared to the percentage of people who said dyes were in recycled water. And this was interesting and very consistent. So we look across this list, and then when we get to, this is continuing on the same list, consistently a higher percentage of people who saw the word reclaimed believed that the component was in the water compared to the percentage of people who saw the word recycled. The only difference was, where'd it go? Nothing harmful up here at the top. So a higher percentage of people who saw the word recycled believed that there was nothing harmful in the water compared to the percentage of subjects who saw the word reclaimed, indicating there was nothing harmful in the water. So then what we did was we asked the subjects, would you use either recycled or reclaimed water for these particular purposes? And so as we look down the list, what we notice is there is a significant difference for some of the uses listed at the top. And we classify these uses, cooking and drinking and washing produce. We call those personal consumption because they are actually going to consume that. When we talk about things like bathing, washing a pet, and rinsing the toilet, these are personal but indirect uses. And so as we go from personal direct uses up here to personal indirect, and then public uses would be, examples would be fighting fires or irrigating public parks, we see that there the difference in the percentage of each sample willing to use that type of water for that particular use, that difference evaporates. So for the personal direct uses, we see a higher percentage of the reclaimed folks saying that they recycled folks saying that they would use water for that particular purpose. And so here we draw those lines between personal direct, personal indirect, and public, and we see a cutoff somewhere in the personal indirect where the difference kind of evaporates. So when we're not using it for consumption purposes, we don't see a difference in perception between the word recycled and reclaimed. So in terms of rating the riskiness on the 5-point scale from 1 being extremely risky to 5 being extremely safe, we see a little bit muddier water, if you will. So, yeah, you like that, Charlie? So, for cooking, we see the perception is, there is a significant difference between the risk perceptions of those seeing the word reclaimed and recycled with, more is better here, 5 is extremely safe, so, we see a higher rating. However, for drinking, we didn't see a difference between the word recycled and reclaimed. When we look at those personal indirect influences, we do see differences, and consistently the risk perception rating from the folks who saw the word recycled was consistently higher than the risk perception rating of the people who saw reclaimed. And then down here in the public uses, the risk perception for firefighting, I'm not quite sure why this was a difference, but we did find a difference. And then for irrigating, or there was no difference, but for irrigating a public park, perhaps because they're walking through the park or their skin might be touching the grounds that were irrigated. So anyway, we did see a difference in that risk perception rating. So conclusions from this study, what we saw here was that reclaimed is perceived as a riskier label on a water source compared to recycled. Recycled is the preferred term, and we hypothesize that this is because Americans associate a positive meaning with recycling. Recycling is something that most of us do on a regular basis. We understand what that means, and there's a positive connotation there. So this conclusion was supported through a consistently higher percentage of the subjects who perceived reclaimed water that contained more harmful substances than recycled water. We also saw that a higher percentage of subjects reported they would use recycled water for personal direct uses, and a similar percentage of subjects who would use the recycled or reclaimed water for personal indirect and public uses. Now, oftentimes we are not asking consumers to, or people to consume, have those personal direct uses of recycled water, but they're willing, their risk perception is lower. And so we think this gives the word recycled a higher marketable advantage. And then risk perception evaluation showed that subjects perceived the personal indirect uses of recycled water to be less risky than reclaimed water. So as we move forward in terms of marketing, and we are preparing this publication for the Journal of Environmental Psychology, what we see is that we need to get some consistency in terminology. We need to use the term that has the higher perception or the more positive perception. And we also need to think about using the term more consistently, and perhaps we need to take the word reclaimed out of some of the conversations, and especially out of the marketing, because the perception is there that that is a more riskier water source. So with that, I will see if you have any questions. We're all happy with recycled water. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, good morning. My name is Zhen Kai. I work for Center for Agroforestry, University of Missouri. Our center has a lot of research on specialty crops, for instance, chestnuts, black walnut, elderberry, and mushrooms, and pawpaw is one of them. There are some of my colleagues that work on the production of those specialty crops. Some others are doing some extension work, and I'm doing research on their marketing, consumer preferences, and financial research on those specialty crops. So how many people here have heard about pawpaw before? Well, because we are in the crop world. It's much higher than I expected. So here are some backgrounds about pawpaw. So pawpaw is native to the United States, and it is the largest edible fruit native to the United States. And it has been consumed by Native Americans by hundreds of years. And it has a very sweet taste. And it has a mixed taste of banana, mango, and pineapple. But research on pawpaw are very limited, and there's a lot of information is not clear. For instance, how many participants in the value chain of pawpaw market? So how many people they are producing pawpaw, how many people they are growing pawpaw trees, and how many people are in their are producing pawpaw value added food products. So, and also there are some other information is missing. So does the pawpaw market very competitive? And is that profitable for producing pulpers? And the final question is consumer preferences to pulpers. And what factors affect people's preferences to pulpers? So those informations are not clear. And for my research, I want to understand current and potential pulper market. So specifically, I want to identify market participants along the value chain. And I also want to evaluate the ease of market entry. So what factors affect people, prevent people from entering the pulper market, and the buyer and the seller power, and the demand and supply of the pulper market. And also I want to evaluate consumer preferences pulper. So consumer familiarity with pulper, consumer knowledge about pulpers, and what factors affect consumer preferences. So in order to address those questions, we designed two different surveys, one survey for producers, the other one for consumers. And this slide shows our producer survey. The producer survey has three sections, the demographic information section, and several other questions regarding pulper business and people's attitudes regarding pulper market. Pulper businesses, we asked several questions regarding people's position in the pulper market chain. For instance, whether they are pulper tree growers or whether they are growing pulpers or they are value-added food products, or they are retailers or wholesalers. And also, we ask them how much products they produce and where do they sell their products, and also how much income they get from selling pulpers and other products. And also, we asked some questions regarding their attitudes on pulper market. So how do we think about the supply and demand of pulper market, of the pulper, and factors affect people, factors preventing people from entering the market, and factors that keep people successful in the pulper market, and also ask several questions regarding risks and opportunities in the pulper market. So this slide shows the questionnaire for the consumer. So we first ask about people's knowledge about pulpers. Then we ask about their familiarity and consumption of fresh pulper and value-added products. Then we have a conjoint analysis investigating people's preferences to different attributes of pulpers. So we select three different attributes: price, production process, origin, because those attributes were found to be influential in affecting people's preferences to different specialty crops. And for the price, we have three levels: $3.5 per pound, $4.5 per pound, and $5.5 per pound. For production process, pesticide-free, so which means the production of pulpers does not use pesticides, chemical pesticides. Organic pulpers means the production of pulpers using some organic methods and it does not use those chemical compounds and pesticide. The conventional just use some chemical compounds, pesticide, anything you can use to maximize the yields. And origin, so whether it's locally produced and whether the region of origin is unknown. So those are the attributes and the levels used in the conjoint analysis. And we collected our data through Qualtrics, and lots of people in this room has used Qualtrics before, so I don't want to explain more about Qualtrics. And we sample our respondents by sending email links to potential respondents. And our sample includes attendees of the first international pulper conferences, and members at the North American Pawpaw Growers Association and attendees of the 2017 Ohio Pawpaw Festival. So we used both quantitative and qualitative methods. So results for the producer survey, and totally we got 81 respondents from our producers. And also, I want to mention that because we didn't pay for our respondents, and because we don't have enough money for doing that, so we really appreciate our respondents for doing this for us. And of those respondents, one third of them are pawpaw tree growers, and one fourth of them are pawpaw fruit growers. But 70% of them earn less than $1,000 a year from pawpaw. So those numbers shows that right now the pawpaw market has, the producers, they are all in a very small scale. So in terms of barriers to enter the pawpaw market, production knowledge, production skills are ranked most important. And fortunately, now we have several agencies or universities that are helping people produce pawpaw. The Kentucky State University has a very good research programs in pawpaw production, and also the Ohio Pawpaw Festival, there are several guys who is good at producing pawpaws. And there is someone, the Peterson Pawpaw Company, they also provide very great production knowledge to people. So thanks to those guys. And also, it is interesting to see that market knowledge is not that important. I'm thinking this might be because, I will talk about that later, and people think that in the pawpaw market, the demand is going to increase. So that is why people does not think market knowledge is very important. And also, advertising, brand name, access to credit, they are not important. So the results for the resources to remain successful in the industry, again, production skills, production knowledge, they are the most important. Marketing, not important. Advertising, brand name, access to credit, not important. And this result shows people's perceptions to pawpaw supply in the past 5 years. So 43% of them said the pawpaw market had been increased, but 43% said they don't know. And also, in terms of people's perceptions to pawpaw supply in the next 5 years, 60% of them indicate that pawpaw supply is going to increase, and 36% of them says, I don't know. So pawpaw producers seems like they do not have enough information about the pawpaw supply. And let's see the demand. In the past 5 years, 61% of the respondents indicated the demand has increased. And when talking about the demand in the next 5 years, it's 100% of them said it is going to increase. So this suggests that the pawpaw market is that it has a great potential to grow in the future. And in terms of pawpaw prices, and fresh pawpaws ranged from $2 per pound to $15 per pound. Yeah, $15 per pound is very high. But I think the prices may depend on a lot of factors, for the pawpaw quantities and the place they sell their product. Or I think Amazon might have a higher price for pawpaws because Amazon also charges some money for selling products there. And the frozen pulp, $8 per pound, pawpaw jam, $8 per pound, seeds and seedlings. And actually, the United States is exporting those seeds and seedlings to other countries. Another question is about the substitutes of pawpaws. The majority of respondents said there's no substitutes for pawpaws, and the other people identified potential substitutes. In terms of market competition, respondents' result is mixed. So 38% of them thinks it's competitive, 38% seems not competitive. And consumer preferences. So we have 91 respondents, and the majority of them are from Ohio, Kentucky, and Pennsylvania, because Ohio has an Ohio Pawpaw Festival, and it has a lot of pawpaw educational programs and a pawpaw eating contests in the festival. And Kentucky has Kentucky State University that provides a lot of pawpaw educational programs. But almost all of our respondents, they said they're familiar with pawpaws, and 70% of them had purchased pawpaws. Those numbers are high because of our samples, because we only select people from the Pawpaw Festival Association and conference. In terms of knowledge and attitudes to pawpaws, people said like the flavor of fresh pawpaws, like eating fresh pawpaws, and seems like all respondents have high knowledge about the nutrition value of pawpaws and the shelf life of pawpaws. And in terms of their preferences, higher price of pawpaws leads to lower consumer preferences, and organic pawpaws have higher consumer preferences compared to conventional pawpaws, and people are willing to pay $1.74 per pound for organic pawpaws compared to conventional pawpaws. And people also like pesticide-free pawpaws better than conventional pawpaws. Those locally produced pawpaws get more willingness to pay compared to other organic and pesticide-free pawpaws. So, and relative importance, when people are buying pawpaws, so the value, the region of origin, the most important. And then after that, then production process. Sorry. So, conclusion. And our result shows that most participants in the pawpaw market, they are small scale, and they get less than $1,000 per year. But the pawpaw market has a great potential to grow because people think that the demand is increasing. And people like organic and pesticide-free pawpaws. So we suggest that when selling pawpaws, it's better for people to label their organic pesticide-free pawpaws, and also if they can label their products as local. So thank you. Sorry.